All right, everyone. Welcome back to another great episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm joined today by Erbil Karaman, and he is the founder of Huma Finance, among a bunch of other stuff. Erbil, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you, Aaron. It's great to be on this amazing show. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm doing okay. You know, we've had to check internally here, like, where's our money stored again? Are our deposits still there? Fortunately, we're okay here at Crypto Revolution. No damage taken. You are a tech investor, tech builder out in the Silicon Valley. How are you doing, for real?
Yeah, this weekend has been insane. As you've seen the news, first Silicon Valley Bank has been taken over by FDIC. And then, you know, we had Signature Bank also been shut down by the government as well. And those two companies, those two banks are, you know, heavily used by both the VC-backed companies in the Bay Area, but also a lot of the crypto companies, work with them, including the big ones all the way to small ones, because there aren't that many banks also who want to work with the crypto industry and the blockchain industry. So it's been a crazy weekend. We've been lucky as Huma Finance not to have any deposits in either of those banks, but a lot of our founder friends have been struggling either because they had debt facilities or deposits in those banks and they had no clue what the state of those funds were. And I think the news that came up yesterday evening was very welcomed, and I think people are a bit more relaxed right now and trying to figure out basically the logistic part of it. But it showed us that, how fragile this fractional banking system is.
Yeah, and Joe Biden came out and gave a very impassioned, energetic 5-minute speech on the topic and basically said no one is above the law in his administration and he will hold those accountable that are responsible. Well, Joe,
who's responsible?
That you probably didn't know before you said this, or your writers didn't know before you said this. This whole bank run was caused by the Federal Reserve raising rates too quickly. So what happened at these other banks is they didn't run out of cash. There wasn't a bunch of fraud going on or embezzlement. It's that they had locked up this cash in government bonds that didn't expire enough, or were yielding too low because they were made, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when the former administration was in control and the Fed's rates were like 1%, in some cases less. Europe was at negative interest rates. But now that interest rates are higher than 4%, people want to get a better yield than what they're getting off those old bond terms. So this was a situation literally created by the Federal Reserve. It's laughable to think that our president's going to do anything about that. The last one who tried to do that didn't go so well.
That's right.
This really highlights the need for decentralized finance. Mm-hmm. Centralized finance is a complete shit show. There's more corruption and broken things even going on in DeFi. While I say, Solidity is the biggest vulnerability in our space that needs to be fixed, it's also going to be the pathway out once we can, maybe get some of these smart contracts more encrypted, figure out better means for security at an on-chain level. What are you thinking about? What are you watching right now? You've got central banks fumbling things. You've got smaller banks either fumbling things or being taken over for no reason, as we've seen with Signature, who was perfectly solvent before New York decided to step in and prevent what they feared would be the next bank run. Signature has actually done nothing wrong, and they'll be taking this to court. So that's crazy. But then you also have Euler Finance, one of the smartest engineering teams, with 6 audits on their contracts, drained for $130 million over this weekend. What is safe anymore? What's your opinion on the state of the financial world? What do we do?
It's insane. I mean, all of these are also happening around the same time. It's insane because obviously it gives people the feeling that nothing is safe. I hope to believe that the reality is slightly different. First of all, philosophically, what you mentioned is centralization always ends up getting into trouble because there's limited control when you have too much centralization. There is more opacity versus transparency when you have more centralization. And the decision starts being made by, you know, very few entities. And if one of those entities makes the wrong decision, just like, you know, Fed giving the wrong call to all the banks, it causes systemic crash across the board. So more decentralization is only helpful because it creates more options also for people to participate in. Right now, a lot of the blockchain technology companies don't even have a bank to go to, right? Like, we are basically out of option in the centralized manner, in the TradeFi system. So there's probably more options as you more decentralize, but the safety and security of the decentralized ecosystem in DeFi, it's hard to say is at the best place possible. There's still so much work to be done, and there's more learning, for all of us to understand what other kind of attack vectors out there. And some of the ways actually we have built Huma is trying to basically limit the number of attack vectors, number of weaknesses you can have in a protocol. Today, some of these attacks have a very similar nature where you have speculative assets that are basically, underwriting your loans. And whenever someone actually is able to manipulate the price of the speculative assets or able to, do what they call a flash loan, basically in just a matter of, a minute, borrow and lend a lot of them at the same time to kind of like create this, unstable price. Those are the ways that these protocols get hacked. And by eliminating some of those vulnerabilities, we believe there's so many more ways that DeFi can be more secure. But obviously, we're still early on in this journey, and we have to keep focusing on finding the next potential attack vector before the hackers do so that we can get ahead of it.
Well, this is not a paid shill, but I personally believe that you're the right man for the job. We met just a couple weeks ago at ETH Denver. I got to hear about your background. You're the former head of product at Lyft, former head of growth at Facebook. You've been an entrepreneur for many, many successful companies. So you know what you're doing, and you know how to do it in a way that benefits the world. So at a high level, what is Huma Finance?
Huma Finance is an income-backed decentralized finance protocol for 99%. We say income-backed because today, most of the DeFi is backed by a few digital assets. So you need to have a lot of Ethereum, a lot of BTC, Bitcoin, to be able to borrow from these DeFi markets. And it only works for the speculators, the people who have a lot of crypto assets. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for 99%. It doesn't work for the small businesses and the people who want to access the centralized finance ecosystem because they might not be served by the centralized and traditional financial industry. And those people do not have all those, Ethereums and Bitcoins laying around, but they have a form of future income. They have a form of future revenue, and they can actually utilize that to collateralize and borrow from the decentralized finance ecosystem. So we are the first protocol making that available to businesses and people around the world.
And that was the promise of decentralized finance when it was first built, to bank the unbanked, to be built for the other 5 billion people on the planet that don't have these services. And one of the reasons why these services aren't available in the first place is risk. How are you handling the risk mechanisms at Huma Finance of tokenizing someone's income or accounts receivable or maybe even their paper route?
A very good question. This is actually a solved problem in traditional finance. Today, when you want to get a mortgage, when you want to get a personal loan, or if you're a business trying to get a business loan, the first things the underwriters look for is what does your income look like right now and what does it look like 6 months, a year ahead down the line. And same thing for businesses. They try to project your revenue to understand your revenue situation 6 months, a year down the road. Why? Because that's the most important input that guarantees your ability to pay back, right? If you have the income stability, if you have the income proof, especially right now and projecting, you know, a year ahead, you have some kind of proof that you can actually pay back the loans that you're borrowing. And, you know, our inspiration comes from the last fintech that three of the co-founders worked at, Earnin. We were providing an alternative to payday loans in the United States for tens of millions of Americans, you know, who had, again, no access to the traditional finance, no bank would give them credit. And they would go to payday loan providers and they would basically get wrecked and they would be, you know, in financial trouble and debt for a long time. And we built a solution that did not require any credit score checks, because that would mean that we couldn't serve any of those people. And it did not require collections. We had non-recourse cash advances. The only thing that we have done very well is to predict the income, the future income, very, very accurately. So one of our co-founders was the head of risk and machine learning at Earnin. And his specialty is predicting these incomes and revenues. And that's exactly what we do at Huma. So we are able to predict the future income, and we can create an on-chain collateral that represents that future income. If it's an on-chain income, we're able to do it right away on-chain. If it's an off-chain income, so let's say there's a small business who wants to borrow from Huma, we have fintech partners around the world who are able to tokenize and collateralize their future income and future revenue sources, bring it on-chain to borrow again. So we're able to basically utilize the future income and revenue sources as collateral, as you know, alternative to utilizing digital assets as collateral.
Before I was in crypto, I was in a situation where I would have to get payday loans from time to time or take out a small personal loan from one of these lending institutions that was for people with poor credit scores or no credit at all. And the way they made these services available was through extremely high interest rates to cover the people that defaulted on this stuff. But for the people who didn't default, it made it extremely difficult to ever get out from under these loans. What are you doing differently at Huma to prevent the same cycle of poverty from just continuing?
Yeah, I can talk about the philosophy that we had starting from the fintech we were together with at Earnin. We actually had 0% interest rate and people thought we were crazy. But that company grew to, you know, providing billions of cash advances every year to tens of millions of Americans with less than 1% default rate and with, you know, enough profitability and sustainability for the company to, you know, I believe it's the 10th year anniversary of the company right now, and it's still providing the services to, you know, many Americans. And the way actually we approach this is from a different perspective, where we do believe that if you have the perspective to make the most money from every borrower, you end up pushing them to default because you end up, you know, helping them borrow more than what they can afford. And you charge them, you know, amazingly high interest rates and very high late fees and other types of penalties. And you make money because, you know, you look at this in a very transactional way. You don't want to make money from them again. And, you know, you let them basically deal with that debt. But if you have a protocol on crypto, first of all, you can't do collections, right? So actually you have no chance to create a structure where you have this adverse, you know, relationship with the borrower. So you can't do collections on blockchain. There's an advantage for people who actually want to do sustainable, you know, borrowing and lending possible. But also if you actually create a structure where your rates are dynamic, and you're not starting with the highest risk portfolios, but, you know, somewhere low to mid risk portfolios, and you can keep your rates affordable, then again, you're not pushing people to default. You're not pushing people to borrow more than what they can. And if you're collateralizing every single borrowing with the future income or revenue statement that's on chain, you have this basically very, you know, free and open market that's, you know, pricing all of those different types of collateral in real time. And again, that market, once it, you know, achieves efficiency, is a very affordable market, is a large market, is a market that anybody can participate. And hopefully, again, we are yet to see because we're very new, but hopefully it's also the most sustainable way for people to and business to borrow.
So if I'm a gardener that needs to buy a new truck because my truck from 1960 that has 800,000 miles on it is finally broken down and can't be fixed, and I want to apply for a loan against my landscaping business, what's the process of doing that? Do I just need to email over documents, or is there some kind of system where I just need to sign up and have a one-on-one interview? How does it work?
Yeah, beautiful question. And this is also the beauty of, you know, building solutions on the blockchain technology, because almost everything is automated and instant. So we have one partner, Jia.xyz. They provide small business loans to, you know, medical suppliers and agricultural providers in Kenya and Philippines. So let's talk about, you know, how this works in real life today. So a small business or a gardener can go to Jia mobile app. It's a very simple mobile app. They just, you know, download this application. They sign up on the application. And all they have to do is basically connect wherever they have this, you know, transactions in terms of their business. So for a gardener, you know, whatever they're holding, the inventory and some bank account probably, they can just connect it into the application right there. And then the application goes through and understands, you know, what does their inventory look like? What does their sales cycle look like? And predicts basically what kind of borrowing capability they might have. And right on that simple mobile app, they get approved for borrowing. And Jia utilizes the Huma protocol to basically access the global blockchain capital markets to find the you know, money that the gardener is looking for at the cheapest rate possible. All of that is instant, right? Immediately, they're able to access that capital, bring it off-chain, utilizing an off-ramp solution through, you know, Circle, which is the USDC provider. And that money is in the account of the gardener in just a matter of seconds, maybe minutes. So that's like how simple it is. The gardener might not even know that they're accessing capital from DeFi, right? Because they're just interacting with a simple mobile app. And when the gardener pays back, they're also getting rewards in the application itself. And those rewards might be representing some kind of token rewards that this, you know, partner has created on top of the Huma protocol as well. But again, the gardener doesn't need to know that those rewards are coming from DeFi. If the gardener is in trouble of paying their, you know, debt, those tokens can be utilized to also cover for, you know, what the gap is. So in a way, that partner is becoming what we call the last mile partner to create the seamless experiences for people to borrow instantly. And that's the biggest difference, right? In TradeFi, there are so many people you need to talk to, you need to go through weeks of processes and paperwork. But by making this available on DeFi, we make credit instant.
I love that. We always say that, you know, Web3 and crypto adoption is going to happen when people don't know they're using it. And this is a perfect use case that shows that off. I love the idea of using something like a Compound Finance or an Aave or whatever it is, which already have extremely low interest rates. And if you're borrowing a stablecoin against it, sometimes it's even less than 1% compared to the 31 or 40 or even 60% that you might get at a payday loan office. I mean, this really is a game changer for billions of people in the world.
That's right.
Now that this exists, how do you reach the people that need this the most? What's the growth strategy?
So we just announced our public beta literally 2 weeks ago when we met at Ethereum Denver. And since then, more than 30,000 people around the world. It's just incredible. We were not expecting, to be honest, that kind of interest. But more than 30,000 people around the world tried basically, you know, using this solution on Huma Finance and through some of our partners as well. We were shocked because, you know, we have not written any kind of, you know, PR statement or, you know, let's use, you know, Huma type of like marketing material. People started creating FAQs, starting, you know, creating YouTube videos in different languages that I don't speak. And, you know, this just started, you know, spreading virally. And as people, you know, heard about this potential application, you know, everybody was coming into our Discord and application to try this out. And that's the reason why we're also actively working with emerging market fintech partners, because those partners are right in the epicenter of the need, right? There's like trillions of dollars of capital gap for people and businesses who are trying to access capital versus what capital is available to them. And those partners are the best partners because they know, you know, the businesses that are most in need and the people that are most in need, but also at the same time, responsible borrowers. And they're able to onboard them through very simple, you know, mobile app experiences. and seamlessly, you know, let those people access the blockchain capital through Huma Finance. And those fintech partners we have in Latin America, we have in Africa, and we have in Southeast Asia will be the way that DeFi will reach the next billion users and then the next and the next and next billion as well.
That's incredible. I'm so happy to hear that mass adoption is coming, maybe even before you're ready for it. But
indeed,
it just shows indeed. That you've got amazing product market fit. What about the lenders? What about people in the community that want to participate on the lending side? Is there anything built for them?
Yes, exactly. So obviously a marketplace, you know, only works when you have both sides of the marketplace, the borrowers and the lenders. And, you know, Huma facilitates the creation of a lot of different type of lending markets. We have invoice factoring markets. We have markets for these kind of emerging market fintechs and their small businesses borrowing. So all these different markets are becoming available on Huma Finance. And just like borrowers can participate, lenders can also participate. Right now, we accept accredited investors from all around the world to basically provide the supply capital. And the rates will be somewhere around 10 to 20%, which is much lower than basically, you know, the rates of capital in emerging markets right now, especially considering, you know, short to midterm type of loans and factoring. And, you know, we are just, you know, starting, and hopefully we'll get to a point where this is going to be, you know, a very accessible product for anybody who wants to basically earn some stable yield, not necessarily from TradFi, but from DeFi.
What is the yield in? Is it in Huma tokens or stable coins? Is it coming from a bootstrap pool or just fees paid on the platform? How does that work?
Yes. So right now, because we only support, you know, borrowing against real world use cases, and we only support borrowing with stable tokens. So all of the yield is also is in stable tokens. So the yield is in USDC, and the markets are in USDC right now. As we grow, we will make more types of yields available in the market as well.
That's amazing. Really cool. What else do you want to connect to? Like, what do you think the next partnerships are going to be for Huma in terms of other DeFi money Legos or products or services that you want to offer?
Great question. So I think, you know, we are still in early stages and early days of DeFi, and we're still missing a few components. One is, how do we actually bring credit reputation into the DeFi ecosystem? Because right now, if you think about how credit works in the real world, you have the assets, right, that you're borrowing against. You have the income and revenue to prove your payback capacity, but also you have this thing called credit reputation. And the way it's built in TradFi and the way it's built in, you know, emerging markets, the reputation almost always focuses on the negative elements. And it almost is a mechanism to push people out of the system, not necessarily to bring them into the system. The moment you make a mistake, you know, your score tanks, and then good luck, you know, going back and borrowing from one of the centralized parties. So we are actively working with a few teams, like Spectral is one of those teams that we're working with closely, and a few others who are trying to build a more fair, a more positive credit reputation system that can be used as an additional signal for underwriters on chain. So that's actually, I think, one of the most important aspects of the ecosystem that's just being built. And then off-ramp partners is important, because moving money, you know, from crypto to fiat is going to continue to be critical to be able to bring people into the crypto ecosystem without them needing to first set up a wallet and try to figure out what their seed phrase is, trying to figure out where to buy their, you know, USDC or Ethereum or BTC. If we can actually onboard people without needing that through, you know, good on-off-ramp partners that provide capital-efficient solutions that works in different parts of the world, that's going to be very important to accelerate the adoption path as well. And we're looking to, you know, work with more of them. Obviously, Circle is one of the biggest partners that we have, and that helps a lot. But still, there are a lot of uncovered, you know, cases around the world. And the more off-ramp and on-ramp partners are there, the more automated these systems are going to become, and the more seamless the experiences are going to become. And it's just going to take seconds for people to access capital instantly.
With the U.S. banking system and government working so much against the crypto industry right now, which I don't believe is long term. I think it's only short term, by the way. But this is undoubtedly going to push companies to leave the U.S., especially ones that simply can't find banking partners. What would it take for you to pack up and go overseas with your company?
That's a great question, because to be honest, we asked ourselves that questions that question a few times, in the past. I believe what's going on right now is reactionary, is, you know, reacting to the events of the past year, and I think a lot of it is, we asked for it as an industry, and some of the players, who had ill intention, asked for it, and that reaction is understandable. However, it will be super short-sighted, I believe, for the U.S. government to push that whole innovation and the whole ecosystem out, knowing that, majority of the ecosystem is actually looking for innovation, looking for making these financial services more accessible around the globe. And, we already know a lot of our friends actually are packing up and going. We are here. All of our co-founders are here in the U.S. We like to stay here because we believe, the ethos of the blockchain ecosystem, ethos of crypto, aligns very well with the foundational values of the United States of America. And I believe and I hope that the tide will calm down and turn around in the coming year or two, when there is better regulatory frameworks to protect the consumers and the businesses who are participating. But also, we have to enable all of this innovation happening in the U.S. soil. If we don't, there's only so much patience every company will have. We have a lot of patience, but there's only so much of it every company has. And they will go to Singapore. They will go to Europe. They will go to Hong Kong. They will go to Brazil. They will they will go to wherever they find a friendlier environment for this innovation. The innovation is going to continue to happen. There's no way, we can just say, stop the innovation around the world, don't go anywhere. That's going to continue to happen. So it's only the right thing, I think, for the U.S. To find the right regulatory framework and start, becoming more friendly to the innovation happening right now.
And I think it will in time. I feel like this is all a big smokescreen and charade to try and slow things down so traditional finance can figure out how to participate. So the people that have all the money and power can still participate because they see how disruptive this is. And if they don't figure out how to join and participate, they're going to go the way of the newspaper and the horse and carriage. So I think they're doing all they can right now to kind of grab onto the ankles of crypto as it's running a million miles an hour. And their minds and their policies don't allow them to do that whatsoever. So I do think that's only a matter of time, because you can't be so stupid as to say we've got so lucky to have the entire future being built on our land and we're just going to squash it. I don't think that's the case. But in the meantime, there is going to be a lot of pain and collateral damage. And I think very rigged situations where they try and force companies to fail just so they can be bought up for pennies on the dollar by traditional finance companies or investors. So keep that in mind from a bigger picture standpoint. This is not the end, even though it's been a very, very tough week for many people. One of the things that gives me hope is that the game is rigged. When there's uncertainty, that's so much worse than knowing that the outcome is more or less guaranteed. But this has been happening throughout many other emerging industries, all the way from back, when they had cars. The regulations around cars when they came out were absolutely insane. You needed flagmen to walk with you. You needed a full-time mechanic in the passenger seat. All kinds of crazy stuff that sounds completely absurd today. But it was so people could figure out how to transition away from holdings and carriage companies to tire manufacturers.
Yeah.
And for better or for worse, the game is rigged. It always will be. But if you know how to play it, you can still do fine and sleep at night. So that's the words of wisdom that I would encourage everyone listening to keep in the back of their heads when they see all this insanity. But as far as a practical thing, companies still need bank accounts. People that want to invest in crypto still need bank accounts. And we've seen a lot of those options being removed lately. Can you give a shout out to some of the crypto-friendly banks that are still in existence? Just so we can do our own due diligence and see if it makes sense and if they're healthy enough to sign up for an account.
Definitely. You know, we have been lucky again that we had a great partner called Mercury Bank. They are a startup themselves, and they are very founder and crypto friendly, and they provide solutions like a checking account that sweeps through many different bank accounts behind the scenes and provides up to $3 million in FDIC insurance that way. And they also have treasury money market funds that, you know, you can put your money into. And we have been really happy with the, you know, response that they had, especially, you know, this weekend, but also, you know, the support that they have for the whole ecosystem. So yeah, shout out to Mercury Bank and what they are doing. And there are other banks, I think, starting to think about like where they stand. Because the, I think, important moment that everybody is like looking at themselves and say, okay, like where do we stand right now? I'm not going to name them because we haven't worked with them yet. But, you know, we just started those conversations literally yesterday and today, and hope that that, you know, trend continues and more banks, you know, join in with this innovation that's happening, and not just like give in to the, you know, one-time shock that has happened. Not because, you know, anything the crypto industry has done, because the Fed has, you know, miscommunicated their strategy in terms of inflation and rates, and that caused, you know, some of those banks to not be able to, you know, match their cash outflow demands. So I think, you know, if we put the blame on the right entity and the right agency, you know, everybody start realizing that there's so much more innovation, so much more economic growth to be generated by supporting the blockchain ecosystem and startups. So we hope that there's going to be more to add to that list.
Yeah. And I just saw there was a new partnership between Coinbase and Cross River Bank that was announced yesterday as well. So shout out to Cross River for stepping up. I had a chance to meet them at Money 2020 last year and was excited to see additional support for our industry. So I hope they do really well. Well, this has been great getting a chance to pick your brain once again. Just a couple more questions before we let you go. You know, who's one person that you really admire in the crypto space and inspires you to do what you're doing?
There are many. I think there is, you know, Santiago Santos, who was the founder of ParaFi. And I think he always has this very balanced perspective. You know, you have people who are either very pessimistic about everything or very optimistic about everything. And I think, you know, Santiago Santos is this very, very kind of neutral voice, and he looks at everything very logically. And I think he has a very good macro take on everything. So, you know, I follow him, and he's an investor in Huma as well and supporter of Huma. So, you know, we like to take his brain on certain things. Same with Tarun Chitra, the founder of Gauntlet, the risk mechanism behind Aave and Compound. You know, he's a genius economist and mathematician, and he always thinks about problems from the perspective of like mathematics and economics. And, you know, he is so relentless in terms of creating solutions that strengthens the security and the risk measures that the investor can take. Because to your, you know, very first point, I think that is still the most important, most critical thing we all have to focus on as an industry. I think Tarun, you know, does an incredible job like pushing the thought process, you know, years ahead. And probably third person would be Stani from, you know, the founder of Aave and Lens Protocol. He's a great builder. Like this guy just like don't give a damn about, you know, what's going on. He just like keeps building. And, you know, what he's doing right now with Lens Protocol, creating his kind of social networking, decentralized social networking protocol for the whole ecosystem. It has been like amazing to see him operate that way. I love, you know, builders, being a builder myself. Who just like don't give a damn about what's going on in the world, just like, you know, keep building stuff for the benefit of people. So I would say those three are the people I, you know, watch very closely and admire.
Those are all great suggestions. We've had Santiago on in the past at a hedge fund summit, and he was one of the best speakers there. So, we need to bring him back on again. And, of course,
totally.
The other two are tremendous at what they do. And you yourself, I think, are going to be on the lips of many other people that are future guests on this show for what you're building in this space. We're so happy to have you in Web3. You've done so many other amazing things in the world already. So you and I are definitely going to keep in touch on all kinds of stuff. But for now, where can people follow you to learn more updates and hear more of your thoughts?
Just follow our Twitter at Huma Finance, and we will be writing more about our thoughts, our progress, how we like to collaborate and solve problems in the ecosystem with others. So at Huma Finance at Twitter. And if they want to just talk to us, come to one of our Twitter spaces or Discord community calls, and our whole team is there, and we're happy to have discourse on anything.
All right, everyone, that was Erbil Karaman from Huma Finance, and I am Pete Zamind. We will see you later on this week with another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. Goodbye for now.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.